Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-Trim. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
Finding my day.
Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks for tuning in. We woke up this morning realizing it was day two of the new way forward in Iraq. Chris Floyd has written something very interesting about what's going on. I'm going to share with you in a minute. But anyway, George Bush has slouched off to Camp David to lick his wounds. And did you see the picture? Oh, my God. Oh, the picture. It was in the American press, the tabloid press, and it was in the British tabloid press. George W. Bush with a tear coming down his cheek as he awarded posthumously the Medal of Honor to another soldier whose death he is directly responsible for. Oh, poor man. So with that and kind of the nasty reaction he's been getting from ungrateful Americans in that lousy Congress, Bush decided to go to Camp David. Now, he's not going to be completely on his own. He's invited some of the Republican leaders to come and have a sit down with him because too many of them are getting out of line. Too many of them are expressing not just reservations about Bush's plan, but total contempt for it. Republicans. Well, anyway, off he goes to Camp David. I almost believe he thought there'd be some sort of measurable support for these insane plans to increase the killing and the bloodshed and the wounded Americans and the limbs blown off and the dead children in the Middle East. All for oil, too. Funny thing, what alcohol-induced delusions will do to you. Not mine, his. Robert Gates was in the dock today, again, this time before the House Armed Services Committee. I'm sorry, the Senate Armed Services Committee, faced a somewhat tamer crowd than did Condoleezza Rice yesterday. Of course, Gates has not been a visible architect of the war, although Gates, being the slime ball that he is, has been working behind the scenes, I'm sure, just like Henry Kissinger and the rest of these people, Elliot Abrams and Negroponte and Admiral Poindexter, all of the former crew of thugs, killers, and felons from Iran-Contra. But Robert Gates has been not center stage. And the senators probably realized that today and probably thought, gee, you know, we let some actual anger show yesterday. We better dial it back just a little bit. So Gates sat before a more tame crowd in the Senate Armed Services Committee today. And, of course, he kept reminding that panel, that he's only been on board for 3 weeks, not 6 years. What was interesting to me was his claim, I think it was today, that he kept saying, well, I'm not an Iraq expert. Well, I don't know. Well, wasn't this guy one of the leaders in the Iraq study group? Oh, wait, that's right. This is what Bush criminals always say. Well, I don't know. Let me do some research. I'll get back to you. And we also have just a tad of Fox News Channel's plant inside the Bush administration. Obvious plant, nothing secretive about it. Condi fled to Fox News Channel, I believe it was today, and they just beat up on me, all those people. Oh, thank God there's Fox where I can come and get some sympathy. So Tony Snow was answering, actually, some reporters' questions about why Maliki has been mute on the Way Forward plan he supposedly gave Bush to implement, right? And on our impending invasion of Iran, come here. Keep this to yourself, but the Patriot missiles are on their way. Shh, don't tell Syria. So altogether, we have just a jam-packed Friday night for you. Although I'll tell you what we're going to do tonight, we truly are going to focus on your phone calls. You all have been very patient with this program as we have provided sound, but it's time for you all to talk. The phone number here is 800-989-1480. While you're dialing up, this from the New Zealand Herald. The UK, the United Kingdom, tried to stop the Saddam hanging. The dateline is London. Britain tried to prevent the execution of Saddam Hussein, appealing to the Iraqi government right up to the eve of the former dictator's hanging. It all comes out in a letter written by the UK's Foreign Secretary, Margaret Beckett, comparable to our Secretary of State. In a letter to Labour MP Andrew McKinley, she said Britain had pressed its case many times, adding, quote, this included lobbying at the highest level in Baghdad on 29 December. When you couple this with the fact that the Brits now have said they are pulling thousands and thousands of their soldiers out, of course, they're going to redeploy them to Afghanistan. I don't quite understand that. But that's the plan. But they're getting out of Iraq while Bush wants to increase the amount of U.S. presence, the number of soldiers, our soldiers there. The Brits have had enough, apparently. Of course, their oil companies have been guaranteed a massive share, along with American oil companies, of the real prize. I'll tell you what they're waiting for. And this is according to Chris Floyd, writing at Alternet and Information Clearinghouse. The reason that Bush insists that victory, his word, is achievable in Iraq is not because he's deluded or isolated or ignorant or detached from reality or ill-advised or insane or a psychopath. No. It's that his definition of victory is different from those talked about in his own rhetoric. For Bush, you know, victory being democracy, stable government, the end of the violence, yada, 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 yada. Nonsense. For Bush, victory indeed is at hand. It could come any moment now. And the driving force behind his planned surge of American troops is the need to preserve those fruits of victory that are now ripening in his hand. Now, what is it? Well, any time within the next few days, the Iraqi Council of Ministers is expected to approve a new, what is called, hydrocarbon law, essentially drawn up by the Bush administration and its lapdog, the Blair administration in the UK. This is according to reports in The Independent on Sunday. The new bill, quote, will radically redraw the Iraqi oil industry and throw open the doors to the third largest oil reserves in the world, according to The Independent of the UK. Reporters for that newspaper have seen the draft of the new law. It would, quote, allow the first large-scale operation of foreign oil companies in the country since the industry was nationalized in 1972, end quote. If the government's parliamentary majority prevails, in other words, if Maliki holds on, the law should take effect in March. Now, what will happen then? Well, as the newspaper in the UK notes, the law will give Exxon, BP, Shell, and other oil companies, friends of the White House, the Bush White House, unprecedented deals, allowing them to pump huge profits from Iraq's nominally state-owned oil fields for decades to come. Now, according to the Sunday Times, the Independent on Sunday, this law has been in the works since the very beginning of the invasion. In fact, months before the invasion, when the Bush administration brought in Philip Carroll, former CEO of both Shell and Fluor, the politically wired oil servicing firm, to devise contingency plans for divvying up Iraq's oil after the attack. Now, according to senior Bush minions, talking up the plan for what is not a surge but a long-term escalation of urban warfare that the U.S. ground commander in Iraq says will likely last for years, Bush's new strategy includes benchmarks that the natives must meet to keep in favor with their colonial master. Some more of this coming back. This is what it's all about. This is what the demonstrators said 4 years ago. This is what it's all about.
How many kids can you kill and send the lower class the bill so you can drive your kids to soccer practice in your SUV?
The best way to defeat the totalitarian of hate is with an ideology of hope, an ideology of hate.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, I don't know why this is not getting more attention. I'm sure Greg Palast knows about this. Chris Floyd knows about it. Surely members of America's crack news media know about this. The hydrocarbon law that the Iraqi Council of Ministers is expected to approve, drawn up by the Bush administration and members of the Blair administration, it will allow the first large-scale operation of foreign oil companies in that country since the industry was nationalized in 1972. Now, the reason there is a surge ordered by George Bush is because things aren't quite safe. They don't give a damn how many Sunnis are killing Shia or Shia are killing Sunnis. As a matter of fact, they encourage that kind of death. They encourage it. We did this with when we backed Saddam in the Iran-Iraq war. How long did that last? 4, 5, 6 years? How many people died? The idea of people in the Muslim part of the world killing each other is perfect. You know, I get a little tongue-tied because Iran is not an Arab country. They don't speak Arabic. They're Persian. They speak Farsi. But to have Muslim killing Muslim, then, is the point I'm trying to make. Also, this will greatly satisfy our Sunni or Bush's Sunni partners in Kuwait, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia. So the plan, according to Bush thugs talking up this plan for what is not really a surge. You know, all this talk about, well, a couple of 3 months. We'll see. The benchmarks. No. This is long-term escalation of urban warfare. That you heard it the other day. One of the generals, American generals, made the mistake of opening his mouth and speaking a little bit of the truth when he said it's likely to last for years. But this new strategy includes so-called benchmarks that the Iraqis must meet to stay in favor with their colonial master. That would be us. One of the most prominent of these benchmarks is the demand that Iraq, quote, finalize a long-delayed measure on the distribution of oil revenue, end quote. Now, in the past couple of days, we've all heard Bush talk about how oil revenue is going to be distributed amongst the residents of Iraq. That is a filthy, perverted lie. As Chris Floyd writes, from those earliest days until now, throughout all the twists and turns, the blood and chaos of the occupation, the Bush administration has kept its eye on this prize. The new law offers the oil companies of the West a juicy set of production-sharing agreements, they're called PSAs, that will maintain a fig leaf of Iraqi ownership of the nation's oil industry, while letting Bush's big oil buddies rake off up to 75% of all oil profits for an indefinite period until they, the oil companies, decide that their so-called infrastructure investments have been repaid. Now, even then, if that day ever comes, these agreements that the puppet Iraqi government is about to sign into law will give the Western oil, the major oil companies, an unheard of. Even after the 75% is gone, they will get a 20% of Iraq's oil profits forever. Now, that's, according to people in the industry, that's more than twice the average of standard production sharing agreements around the world. That's according to the Independent of the UK. Chris Floyd writes, of course, at the moment, the security situation, in other words, the living hell of death and suffering that Bush's war of choice has brought to Iraq, prevents the big oil barons from setting up shop in the looted fields. Hence, Bush's overwhelming urge to surge, despite the fierce opposition to his plans from Congress, the Pentagon, and some members of his own party. Bush and his inner circle, including his chief advisor, Dick Cheney, believe that a bigger dose of blood and iron in Iraq will produce a sufficient level of stability to allow the oil majors to cash in their production-sharing agreements that more than 3,000 American soldiers have purchased for them with their lives. The American surge, so-called, will be blended into the new draconian effort announced over the weekend by Iraqi Prime Minister al-Maliki, which is an all-out war by the government's Shiite militia-riddled security forces on Sunni enclaves in Baghdad. American troops will support this pacification effort with what Maliki calls house-to-house sweeps of Sunni areas. There is, of course, another phrase for this kind of operation. It's called ethnic cleansing. It's just vile. It's just vile. This is what it's about. And either the members of Congress, the Senate, Armed Services Committee and Foreign Relations Committee, either they don't know about this, or they're not going to talk about it, or they don't give a damn, or it doesn't matter, or something. But here it is. It's been reported in the British press. It's reported online, and you just heard it here.
Why didn't we sort this out last time? Was he less evil then than he is now? The stock market holds the answer to why him, why here, why now? 'Cause it's all about the price of...
Twenty-six before the hour. The level of cynicism here is astonishing. But I guess most of us are pretty much used to it, aren't we? Or do we ever get used to this sort of thing? Maliki has one primary function left, and that is to make sure that this puppet government enacts this law that will open up for American and British oil companies these huge reserves of oil. And again, keep in mind, this will be the first time this has happened since 1972, back when the oil of Iraq was nationalized by Iraq. Now, you know that that's going on in other parts of the world right now. The nationalization of key industries, not the least of which is oil. Where did what country was it? I just read the other day that they have nationalized their electric system because it was owned by an American company, and another one of their systems owned by an American company of the phone system. That's right. And the American business community is pissing and moaning and probably behind closed doors asking Bush to invade. Who is it? Is Argentina? Not Ar- is Argentina? But the deal here with Iraq, I don't know. Sometimes I don't know whether to weep or just have a complete nervous breakdown or just get so enraged. You know, when you find this stuff out. Now, way back before this murderous war started by George Bush, all the demonstrations around the world, you remember all the signs, no blood for oil. People understand. People do understand. There's a huge minority of us in this country. I don't think the majority of the people in this country understand this, but there's a huge minority, a plurality of people who understand what this Bush crime family and this war in Iraq is all about. It has nothing whatsoever, never has had anything to, don't forget, well, you know, why did we invade Iraq the first time? Because the Saudis got nervous, because Saddam had been given permission by George Herbert Walker Bush to go ahead and invade Kuwait. It was all about oil. The Saudis are terrified that Iraq was going to come in and take their oil. The Saudis are now terrified that Iran is going to form this Shia crescent from Afghanistan through Iran, through Iraq, and come swooping down and take over the Saudi oil fields. So it is about oil. Please, for God's sake, let's not be stupid. Let's not pretend this is about, you know, the Iraqi equivalent of Mom, the Flag, and Apple Pie. I mean, what would that be? I don't know. It wouldn't be Apple Pie, that's for damn sure. But it is not. It's not about that. And the deal is just about made. But what has really pissed off the Bush crime family has been these rotten military commanders of ours, rotten in the eyes of the Bush crime family, because they weren't able to pacify the country. Don't you remember what we were told by the neocons? Oh, this would be a cakewalk. No problem. So Bush and Cheney and the oil companies in the United States and the United Kingdom say, okay, well, if it's going to be a cakewalk, go ahead. Hell yeah, we want it. And then it turned out not to be a cakewalk. So everybody gets pissed off. Saddam Hussein gets hanged on the most ludicrous of charges. There is not a world leader, I defy you to name one for me, that's not responsible for more than 168 dead people. Go ahead, name one for me, huh? Name one. Start in our country. You know, just name them. I'm Bill Clinton, Henry Kissinger, Ronald Reagan, George Herbert Walker Bush. I mean, Jimmy Carter. It just goes on and on and on. Gerald Ford, Dick Nixon, Lyndon Johnson, John Kennedy, Harry Truman. Now, expand it out. You tell me, a world leader in the 20th century is not responsible for mega death, a hell of a lot more than Saddam Hussein was tried and executed for. Oh, he's responsible for more than 150, 160 people in one village being executed because they decided to murder his ass. Oh, no. The trial was held about that to protect American involvement in his other acts of murder and terror. Didn't want that to come out. Oh, no. There's nothing I can do about it. There's nothing you can do about it. And I'll tell you what, we can get Bush impeached, and I hope that happens. I really do. But unless there is a fundamental change in what we consider to be our attitude, a change in our attitude about what we consider to be the primary natural resource on this planet, that resource that drives our industry, drives our cars, drives our computers, drives everything. And that's oil. That's fossil fuel. Unless we change, this is not going to stop. This is not going to stop. Come on. You don't think it is, do you? As a matter of fact, it's going to get progressively worse. The Chinese and the Indians are going to demand more oil than there is available. How will they respond? Well, they have tons and tons and billions and trillions and quadrillions of tons of coal. Well, that, okay. They'll burn that and we'll all choke to death. There's got to be, there must be something other than oil. Because as long as there's oil, this will go on. So I know it sounds monumental. It does to me, too. Sometimes, I think about this. I read something by Chris Floyd. I read something by Greg Palast. Read something in the Middle East News or the British press or the New Zealand press, and I just sit down and want to cry. Because there's I don't know how to get out of it. I don't know how you and I and 10 million more of us can end this craziness. I really don't. But in the meantime, while we're trying to figure that out, this nonsense, these lies, this cynicism that Iraq, that we're sending another 20,000 of our mostly young men and some young women into this meat grinder in order to deliver to the Iraqis what George Bush feels they must have, liberty and freedom, the American way, and democracy and a constitution. What a filthy, disgusting, cynical approach. Why not just be honest? We want their oil, and we will kill every son of a bitch that gets in our way. Why not just say that? Oh, it's not very human, is it? Doesn't quite compute. Doesn't look good. Wouldn't look good in the headline in the New York Post, New York Times, Washington Post. Bush, : we will kill every son of a bitch that gets in our way. Now, that doesn't look good. Much better to say, Bush, : we are bringing democracy and freedom to the little Islamic bumblers who want to put their women in sacks. Jesus, God. You can read this. You can go read it. You need to read this. Alternet.org or informationclearinghouse.org. Chris Floyd's article, Claiming the Prize, War Escalation Aimed at Securing Iraqi Oil. You should read it, just so you know. That's all. Just so you know. Just so you don't waver now when this murderous son of a bitch has his picture all over the planet with a tear coming down his eye. Oh, it was so touching. I had this family in here. Well, another one of the young men that I murdered, that I sent to an early death, because I knew that the young man had heroic qualities, and he does. And this is what is so disgusting about this. The young men that are going over there to fight for oil companies and George Bush and Dick Cheney are decent, most of them. Yes, they are. And in a situation, when you're young, when you're 19, 22, 23, 24, you will take action that defines altruism. And in a war zone, you are then dead. And this evil son of a bitch, George Bush, has the family and presents a Congressional Medal of Honor, second one, for people who have been involved in the Iraq War. This miserable, cynical bastard with the tear coming down his eye, knowing full well what this is about. This is not about liberty. This is not about freeing the Iraqis from the yoke of tyranny. It's not about any of that. It's about the oil. It's about the money. It's about the control of resources. But there he was. I watched some of that ceremony. My heart bled for the family, just like it bleeds for Cindy Sheehan. It bleeds for every single family that has contributed a life to this filthy pig's war for oil. Oh, my God, the cynicism. It's just astonishing. It's worse than what the Marine Corps was used for at the turn of the century in Central America, the last century. This is so bad. This is just so bad. All of these American soldiers, how many do we have now? 20, 30, 40,000 coming home with arms blown off, half their faces blown away, confined to wheelchairs on breathing machines for the rest of their lives. These are people who are 20 years old. Jesus Christ, the cynicism here. I mean, how do you deal with it, Truth Seeker? How do you deal with it knowing what you know? That all of these broken young men and women are coming back here, not to mention all the butchered and murdered and destroyed people in the Middle East. How do you do that? How do you deal with it? I'm running out of ways to deal with it.
One of the big concerns early on was the southern oil fields. And at least in the south, they are secure. And that is positive news for all of us.
10 before the hour. And there's another hidden layer to the war. First of all, remember, Johnny emailed in to remind me, the Cheney Energy Task Force, the maps of the Iraqi oil fields being divided up. That group of meetings with the energy kings was on the war plan. If you see that now, you'll know everything you need to know. And back just for a moment, back to Chris Floyd's article at alternet.org. He says, as the Independent Riley noted in its Sunday story, Dick Cheney himself revealed the true goal of the war back in 1999 in a speech he gave when he was still CEO of Halliburton. Quote, where's the oil going to come from? End quote. To slake the world's ever-growing thirst, asked Cheney, then answered his own question, the Middle East. With two-thirds of the world's oil and the lowest cost, the Middle East is still where the prize ultimately lies. End quote. That's in 1999. And as Chris writes, therein lies another hidden layer of the war, for Iraq not only has the world's second largest oil reserves, it also has the world's most easily retrievable oil. As the Independent of the UK succinctly notes, quote, the cost per barrel of extracting oil in Iraq is among the lowest in the world because the reserves are relatively close to the surface. This contrasts starkly with the expensive and risky lengths to which the oil industry must go to find new reserves elsewhere. Blah, blah, blah. So this is what Bush is talking about when he's talking about victory. And I just think, you know, it's one thing for us to be impotent in trying to stop this, but it's something else to be ignorant and impotent. You know what I'm saying? There may not be a whole lot you and I can do. But for God's sake, we need to understand, don't we, what this is about. It must be horrifying. No, let me change it. It must be impossible. It is impossible for a family who has given up a son or a daughter to the oil war, to Bush's murder. It's impossible for that family, I would imagine, it would be for me, to, if I lost a son or daughter in this madness, to say, oh, well, my son or daughter died needlessly because this is all about oil. No, they can't. You know, it's impossible. Down that road lies madness for sure. Individual insanity. My son, my daughter, was blown into a million pieces because Dick Cheney wants oil? Oh, Christ. No, you can't. No, can't do that. But the level of cynicism is monstrous. Bush yesterday, sitting with soldiers here at Fort Benning, Georgia. How he does this, I don't know. These people are without any sort of morality. They are totally amoral. They are not immoral. They are amoral. There is something lacking in these people, in the members of the Bush crime family, at the highest levels. Now, some of them are in it for the kicks, like Negroponte, and he's in it for the joy of knowing he's killing lots of people. John Poindexter is in it because he's in it for the joy of manipulating huge data banks of information. Poindexter is the type that if he would go to a department store to buy something, he would try to figure out a way to peek over the wall of the changing room in the women's part so he could see them in their underwear. That's what Poindexter is. The rest of these people, there are so many people connected with the Bush crime family who have their individual idiosyncrasies. But at the very top, they're strictly amoral. The Carlyle Group, the Halliburton Group, Kellogg Brown and Root, these companies are run by people where death is merely, it's not even a noticeable entry into a ledger form someplace. It's nothing. It's sweeping the street. It's swatting flies. It's putting out a bug bomb. It's clearing the campsite. Men, women, children, combatants, non-combatants, don't care. The international prison camps, the gulag that we have set up, that's for sport, for some of the people inside the Bush crime. You think Cheney gives a tinker's damn about who is or is not held at Guantanamo or what is being or not being done to them to get whatever information or non-information can be tortured out? Hell no. But that gives the illusion, it serves two purposes. It gives the illusion, first of all, that we're in a very serious situation. We have to torture people in order to get information that will stop the blowing up of the Sears Tower in Chicago, for example. That's such a lie. It's such nonsense. But the second level are the people who set these torture camps up are people who genuinely enjoy. They're the John Wayne Gacy's. They're the people who enjoy inflicting pain and humiliation on other human beings. Now, if you have a better explanation for any of this, I certainly would like to hear it. Because I'm going to get out of the way now, and we're going to take your phone calls after this break. But before the weekend's over, please go to alternet.org and read Chris Floyd's article posted there, or go to informationclearinghouse.org and read it there. Claiming the prize, war escalation aimed at securing Iraqi oil. Or go to The Independent on last Sunday and read it there. No, you won't find it in the American media. No. All right, we do have a few sound bites that we are going to work in, probably at the bottom of the hour coming. We're going to take your phone calls when we come back, and then we're going to work these. I want you to hear what the Fox News man, who is in a prominent position in the Bush crime family, Tony Snow, had to say today. And then a couple of questions of Secretary of Death, the new Secretary of Death, Robert Gates. Not many, just a couple. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It is about 6:30 past the hour. As promised, let's do some phone calls here. What do you say? Will is calling from Michigan. Hey, Will, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. I understand where you're coming from not knowing how to deal with this stuff emotionally. I tend to reach out to other people when I get depressed about what's going on. And
yeah.
We've got a really great peace community here in the in the Lansing area.
Uh-huh.
And we've been quite busy lately. Yesterday we had a big protest in East Lansing, right on campus at MSU, during rush hour. And we had about 300 people out there.
Wow.
And today we had our usual Friday vigil at noon on in front of the state capitol building, and we set up a cage and had people in orange jumpsuits and black hoods to mark the fifth anniversary of the opening of the detention centers in Guantanamo.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to be chartering a bus for the big march in Washington, D.C. next, 2 weeks from tomorrow?
Mm-hmm. I think it is 27th, yeah.
Yeah. And so we're really busy, and you know, when any of us in the peace community get discouraged, you know, we've got each other to lean on for support.
That's very true. All right, thanks, Will. Take care. Okay.
I wanted to point out something to you that I put on the
okay.
Web.
Go ahead.
I recorded some ambient sound at our peace vigil today, and I edited it on my computer.
Uh-huh.
I cut out everything except the people in their cars honking in support of the vigil.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I saw the email you sent me. I'll be sure to listen to it.
Oh, you might want to play it on the air.
I can't do it over the phone.
All right.
It just doesn't work. But I will listen to it via the computer. Thanks for sending it to me. All right. Take care, Bill. Will.
Yeah.
I appreciate you checking in. Oh, man. I just keep thinking about the Iran references or the real lack of them. You know, the focus is right now is on sending 20,000 more American soldiers to guarantee that the oil companies can get control of these resources. And the Iran question, whether or not, you know, it seems to be a question, although a lot of people in this country no longer see it as a question. It's not a matter of if we will attack Iran, it's when. And I keep thinking that can't be, you know, we can't, we're not going to attack, even though the U.S. is trying to set up provocative acts, just like Hitler did with Poland. Same thing. No difference at all. But 90,000 people in Iran, it's a highly industrialized society. Yeah, they have some nutballs who have a lot of influence on how the society is run. It would be the same if this country were pretty much as it is, but Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell had control over certain aspects of how we conducted ourselves. That's kind of the way it is in Iraq or in Iran. But what have I read? Some inordinately high number, 50, 60, 70, 80% of the people in that country are under the age of 30, or is it under the age of 25? It's a dynamic country. It is. It's an ancient country. It's a country that we have been screwing with since the 50s. We overthrew one of their governments and installed the Shah, and they responded 29 years later. Well, actually, 26 years later, by throwing the Shah out and the Ayatollah Khomeini coming in and the Iranian Revolution, so-called. But it's not it doesn't seem to be a question of if it's going to happen. It's more of a question of when it's going to happen, for a very simple reason. The oil companies, that would be Bush and Cheney and the British oil companies and the Carlyle Group And these murderous sons of bitches who see human life as just something to sweep all, get out of the way, what, they're going to let Iran come in? Look, Maliki eventually will either die in a plane crash or he'll be assassinated. There's no question. If he's assassinated, it'll either be by a Sunni or by one of our operatives, probably one of our operatives. Maliki is only there for the time being as a figurehead. He's a Shiite. He is aligned with Muqtada al-Sadr, who is aligned with the Iranians. Oh, Jesus. I mean, this is not complicated stuff. The reason Maliki is in the position he's in right now, it's a kind of a quirk. The previous puppets we have put in weren't able to subdue the violence so the oil companies could move in. Maliki has already made it clear, hasn't he, that when it comes time to sweep through these neighborhoods in Baghdad, like Sadr City, that when Muqtada al-Sadr says, no, keep him out of here, Maliki will say, okay, keep him out of there. And now we're to believe that for some reason Maliki has said, okay, I've changed my mind. We're going to go after whomever. Doesn't make any difference if it's Shia or Sunni. Makes no difference. I'm going to kill my own people. No, that's not going to happen. Maliki is gone. He's either a dead man walking or he's smart enough to know it's time for him to leave too. But he soon will be gone. Please trust me on this, okay? I learned a long time ago not to make political predictions, especially where it concerns the Middle East. But this is just blatant. I mean, there's no questions here. Nothing. Allowing Maliki to remain in power because he is a Shia, aligned with the Shia religious leaders in Iraq, who are in turn aligned with the Shia religious leaders in Iran. It doesn't make any difference that they're not Arabic, that they are Persian. It doesn't make any difference that they speak Farsi. And that doesn't matter. This is religion. And this is the Middle East or Southwest Asia, if you want to get technical. And the Taliban, they are Shia, are they not? Huh? Come on. That's why Iran will be attacked, either by us or by Israel. There's no question here. The only question is, what are we going to do when that occurs? It's like what little doubt there was back in 03, when it wasn't yet absolutely, completely, totally certain that this mad monster Cheney was going to order an invasion of Iraq. And millions of people around the world took to the streets. So there was a little element of now they couldn't do that. That's impossible. There's no connection between 9/11 and Iraq. Oh my God. It's not going to, and look what happened. Of course it happened. But Iran is not a country that's been under sanctions for 15 years and suffered a massive death at the hands of the coalition forces in the first Gulf War, and all those years of sanctions under Pappy Bush and Clinton and Junior Bush until the invasion. No, Iran has not suffered through that. Iran has a well-organized military. They are an industrialized country. It's a different situation. And if we attack Iran, you see, it has to be very quickly, because once Iran has nuclear weapons, if we attack them, they will respond like any country would. And they will respond with what they have, nuclear weapons. So it's not if, Truth Seeker, it's when.
He's a man, he's a guru. You're one microscopic cog in his catastrophic plan, designed and directed by his red right hand. Here comes the helicopter, second time today.
Hey, neocons, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Very quickly here, an email from Paula. She writes, Dear Mike, if wishes were horses, you're familiar with that, right? Wouldn't it be wonderful, Paula writes, if once those oil contracts were solidified in Iraq, the U.S. Congress could enforce a law that states that the oil companies' complicity in waging an illegal war would cost them all of their profits forever and must be paid to the families of soldiers who had died. All the soldiers who were in any way harmed, which is all of them, and all the Iraqi citizens who suffered, which is all of them, at the hands of such hideous maliciousness for greed's sake. A beacon to expose the gigantic elephant in the big middle of American life, unmitigated, unbridled greed, the God of America. That is the Republican and corporate Democrat moral code. Those are the values they pray to and worship. It is lauded and applauded and adored on a scale only ancient Rome could admire, and few talk about it. This is not the profit as incentive motive of our forefathers. It is psychopathology run amok. For every dear American soldier without arms, legs, eyes, ears, brains, or genitals are thousands of Iraqis who are in the same shape, only they have no hospitals to speak of or electricity or clean water to help them make them a bit more comfortable or keep them healthy. These filthy criminals should pay through their bank accounts and lives until the only jobs available to them are as janitors cleaning the bedpans of those who have been wronged. No cushy federal prisons, only slave camps like the ones they build all over the world for the underprivileged in the tax-free zones. Only these camps are specific to them. And if they don't do their jobs with generosity of spirit, smiles on their faces, and kindness to those they serve, they can live piled on top of each other in Guantanamo until they starve to death. A little water like that they serve to our soldiers, and extremely expired food, if they can stomach it, to add to the days of their lives, and that is all. No health care, no family, forgotten and discarded except as the pathetic and pitiful examples of the evil of greed. Wouldn't that be a beautiful act of justice? But, Paula concludes, I am an idealist. One can only hope. I know it's sick, but I want justice for these poor souls, every single one, and I know nothing, nothing will ever happen to anyone involved. It helps to fantasize a little. Paula. Yeah, I do the same thing. If there was justice, if there was a God, any God, I don't give a damn who it is, pick one. A God of justice. It can be the Jewish God, Muslim God, Christian. I don't care. If there were such a creature, if there were such a force, these sons of bitches would never, ever, ever be able to raise their heads up out of bed in the morning, because the terrible swift sword would come down and lop them off. I don't know. You know, the church, whatever the church, I don't care what the church is, I don't care what the religion is, you know, they all tell you about the reward or punishment that's coming after death in direct relation to how one lived one's life. And we all know, or those of us who have rational minds, know that that's nonsense and bat squeeze and horse hockey. But isn't there a part of you that wishes it were true? Where there was such a thing as justice, because justice does not exist here. There is no justice here. There is the law, but there is no justice. And we know this. We know this. This 92-year-old woman who was shot dead by Atlanta police as they raided her house a couple of months ago on a tip that there was all kinds of drugs inside. Now, some reports say she's 88. Some say she was 92. But she was an old woman who lived in a high crime area here in Atlanta, and a bunch of narcs came busting in on her. She heard them on the porch before they ran through the door of her house, and they came in, and she had a gun, she had a handgun, and she opened fire, and I think she wounded, didn't she wound a couple of them, Kathy, three of them, the cops, and they filled her full of lead, murdered this old woman, just shot her deader than scum on the bottoms of their shoes. And big outrage here in Atlanta. Oh, my God. These cowboy sons of bitches blasted into this old woman's house and murdered. Well, we had good evidence that there were drugs and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Turns out now that their informant lied. There was nothing in the old woman's house but the old woman. And then another instance here in Atlanta. A lot of you think, well, Atlanta, you know, because it's a black-run city, must be progressive and liberal. Oh, horse hockey. No, absolutely not. The guy that was American Historical Society invited him to come here and speak, the scholar, and I don't know, is he Nobel Prize nominee, whatever. But he was beaten up by police and arrested because he was stopped by a couple of thug police, a thug cop who was not in uniform, demanding identification. And this guy is downtown Atlanta. He doesn't know what the hell is going on. He comes from a society where jaywalking is not a crime. Yeah, he had stepped off the curb and he was getting ready to jaywalk. So the police beat him into the ground and put him in jail. And apology? Nah.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's More Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. AJ, the Music Factory, is calling from New York City. Hey, AJ.
Hey, handsome. How you doing tonight?
Doing great. How about you?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. I have to start to say hello to you and Kathy because I know that she's the invisible one that makes it all happen.
Well, you got that right.
Yeah, if it's anything like my relationship with my wife, I'm the one who's out front and taking all the credit and the spine is in the back, so
yeah.
Good
yeah,
evening
that,
to you both.
That's,
I wanted to make two comments tonight about the speech, one general and one specific, if I have the time. The general one is that, you know, I'm not a person that wants to see harm come to the country or the planet or to anybody.
Right.
But I have to say there's a part of me, however perverse, that when he digs his heels in like this, I'm glad. Because the American people are only going to respond when there is absolutely no ambiguity about this guy's madness.
That's and
if
true,
he can,
yeah.
If he can in any way resemble reasonableness and a willingness to work and a willingness to change his mind, people are going to say, you know, hey, he's not that bad. I mean, I'm not making this up. We've watched this happen for 6 years where people have been bamboozled by him and his regime.
Right.
And so this time, there just can be no doubt. And of course, he facilitates that when he digs his heels in like this. And I have to say, you know, good. I want those poll numbers to go down to 15 and 10. And I want people to think twice next time they vote these guys into office. And I would love the American youth to take this as an example and say, hey, you know, maybe the military is not necessarily an organization that cares, you know, that you sign your life away and that means something. And I have to think twice before I do that because I may join the military today to be a part of a wonderful president and a wonderful government. But that may not be the case in 2 years or 3 years or 4 years.
Right.
So that was the first thing. The second thing was when that really amused me and bemused me is that when there was a notice on CNN's website, you know, they leaked the speech out.
Uh-huh.
And one of the first things they put up was that Bush admits something about he admits mistake or you know, he gets it, I think somebody said.
Uh-huh.
And when he said, you know, the responsibility rests with me, and then shoom, he just flew right over that. You know, this guy, this is the second or third time he said that to appease the public and the press.
Well, AJ, when there are no consequences, hell, I can take responsibility for the bombing of Hiroshima. So what?
Right.
It doesn't mean anything.
Right,
it's utterly meaningless.
Right. Precisely correct. You know, when I was a kid and I took responsibility, I don't know. I don't want to tell you what that cost me with my father, you know. I'm pretty sick and tired of this guy taking admitting responsibility, but not taking it and not suffering the consequence.
See, you know? if he really took responsibility, he would follow that up the way Lyndon Johnson did, although Johnson didn't go far enough. Johnson said, I will not seek reelection. If Bush were a man, instead of this little half-witted jackass that he is, he would say, look, I really screwed up, and therefore I'm resigning.
Yeah, well, that's not going to happen. What is happening is a sort of a second prize to all of us is you see Republicans running from him en masse. And it's going to be a very interesting convention to see how these people are going to both align with him and run away from him at the same time. Because everybody's worried now about 08 and beyond.
Right.
You know?
And well, they should be. Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for all your good work. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, AJ. I appreciate it. You take care.
Yeah. Bye.
Nanette emailed in, Mike, like you, I had an aha moment when I first heard about the imminent Iraq oil, quote, production sharing agreements, end quote. Because nothing has appeared in my Northern California newspaper, the Press Democrat, which is owned by the New York Times, I accessed and read the Independent article online. Puzzled over the omission, I emailed each editor at the Press Democrat and included a link to the Independent article with a request to please let me know why they apparently found it irrelevant. No answer. No article. Sadly, I'm not surprised. Even here in liberal North California, we have struggled since before the 2003 invasion to get even tiny gems of truth out of the media we have. Nanette. Now, that ties in with what AJ was just saying. What I wanted to mention to AJ is, the entire country is turning its back on George Bush. But we don't have institutional memory in this country. We remember, and remember, the main source of information is television for the largest number of people. That's just the way it is. And television is designed specifically to make you forget. Now, all of the attention that was paid yesterday to the angry, acerbic comments from Democrats and Republican senators alike to this incompetent Condoleezza Rice, today they send Gates out and Pace, and all of a sudden, we really appreciate your service to the nation. What the hell has Robert Gates done except work for the corporations who destabilize and exploit just about everybody else on the planet? But there it is, you see. We really appreciate your service to the nation. What has Peter Pace done? Peter Pace has been actively participating in ethnic cleansing, murder, mayhem, a war based on false premises. Where do you find honor in that? If you're a four-star general, if you are the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, where do you find honor? And I ask the question legitimately because I don't know. I have no earthly idea. I know where a sergeant or a lance corporal or a specialist of second or first class finds honor and glory on a battlefield when he or she does an act of heroism or performs an act of heroism that saves the lives of his or her comrades. Sure. Where do you find honor when you're a four-star general or a three-star general or a two and three lieutenant generals and major generals and brigadiers? Every single one of them talk out of the side of their mouths and out of their ears and their asses. It's just incredible. Where do you find honor in that, General Pace? Sitting there in front of these congressional committees, knowing that you're participating in an absolute fraud. Where is the honor? What are you doing to polish up that Marine uniform that you wear? Where is the honor, General Pace? Somebody tell me. Nah, Smedley Butler said it as well as it can be said 100 years ago. I want you to hear Tony Snow today. first briefing following Bush's Way Forward speech. First reporter wants to know what would happen if this plan doesn't work. What consequences will there be? Now, everybody knows there are no consequences. There's no plan. This is baloney. This is crap. But the question is, Secretary Gates was asked repeatedly yesterday and today, when will we know whether this is working? And his answer was, in about 2 months, we should know whether the Iraqis are really meeting up with their commitments. So, in 2 months' time, will this administration kind of do another review to see what they've done, see whether or not what they've done is actually working?
I think we've tried to make the point that we continue to do reviews all the time.
Oh, Christ.
And so there's constant monitoring of the situation. It's not as if you say, okay, we're going to sit back and just wait for 2 months. You know, we talk every day with the embassy in Baghdad. There are constant interaction with the commanding general and others on the ground. So I think it's important to realize that there's consistent and constant monitoring of the situation, and we'll continue to make adjustments.
All of which means nothing. It's utterly, and what this little rat bastard just said is absolutely meaningless. Absolutely meaningless. And the reporter sits down. Another reporter asks about the fact that Maliki doesn't seem to want more American troops in Iraq and hasn't made any public comments on the new plan. Well, there's a surprise. You would think, wouldn't you think, truth seeker, that Maliki would be just jumping all over the Middle East? Because don't forget what George said. George said he went to Jordan, met Maliki. Maliki presented him with the plan. George brought it back home, showed it to the generals and the ISG and this one and that one and Jesus and God and whoever else and everybody fine too. Bam, boom, and becomes policy. Wouldn't you think if that were the case, Maliki would be jumping and hopping around like some kind of a freak on acid, just letting everybody in the Middle East know, look at me, look at me, look at me. But he's disappeared. Question from the reporter. Tony, everyone from the president on down has said that this depends on the cooperation of the Iraqis, and yet to date nothing has been heard from al-Maliki. Maliki, as far as I know, he's declined to endorse this, though invited to do so. There's no expression of enthusiasm over there. Wouldn't you think that under the circumstances, with all of the rollout that's going on here, that you would want the principal ally and architect of this plan to endorse this in the most public and positive way?
No, I think what you're saying is he's not responding to the U.S. press corps.
Oh,
what
my God.
What he's doing is he's responding to the Iraqi public. You've got interesting political dynamics. You can turn it around and say the Iraqis have made clear their support, and implicitly the Prime Minister not only has talked about key elements in a way that I think addresses key American concerns, there have also been very aggressive action within Baghdad proper that demonstrate that there, in fact, are new ways of coordinated operations with the Americans and the Iraqis going after dangerous places within Baghdad. That is not only walking the walk, it's talking the talk, and he's doing both.
You know, every time one of these white, pasty-faced rat bastards rips off and prostitutes a term from the civil rights movement, I could just leap through the television and strangle them. How dare you say walking the walk and talking the talk, you thug punk? Good God. So what did the snowman say right then? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So I guess we're to believe then that the reports of Maliki's tepid response is wrong. The one thing that the old murderer Robert Gates said in his testimony today that rang true was that Maliki wanted to control his own military. Which, doesn't that lead you to conclude that the part of the plan that was Maliki's was the same old security plan like the part Bush added was the troop escalation? Don't you think that's it in a nutshell? There's nothing new here. There's not a thing. That's why Bush said this is new, because the little rat bastard knows nothing is new. But he's talking to America, and he figures that all of us are still so stupid, we're just going to go, okay, yeah, whatever you say, boss.
Tony,
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's about 8 before the hour. All right, back to very quickly here to, this is the last one from Tony Snow. A reporter asked again about Syria and Iran and our recent not to be talked about operations in Iran. Typical Tony Snow. He doesn't know, and of course he's not saying. Question is, Tony, I had two questions here on Iran. You're not saying whether or not there are current battle plans for Syria and Iran. And as to the Patriots that are being deployed, those are new Patriot batteries. They're not things that were planned before. Are they heading to Iran?
Pentagon is the place to go for answering those questions.
What country other than Iran in the region could they be meant to?
As I said, I'll just send you off to the Pentagon for those.
Can you give us an idea of what kinds of things the United States is doing differently regarding those networks in Iran and Syria?
No.
The kinds of things in general?
No, I think the last thing you want to do is to say, we're going to try to disrupt networks and let us tell you how. We live in a world of global communications, and so, no, I can't.
Yeah. Well, what you could do is just come out and say, we did not deliberately provoke or attempt to provoke the Iranians with our raid on their consulate in northern Iraq yesterday, and we really didn't mean to put our soldiers at jeopardy when they were surrounded by Kurdish Iraqi fighters who were about ready to murder every single American involved, because, after all, that's Kurdish territory as far as the Kurds are concerned, and it's an Iranian consulate as far as the Iranians are concerned. So, no, we're not going to talk about that. As far as our people who have been on the ground in Iran for the past, 8 months, painting the targets that we're aiming those Patriots at, no, I'm not going to talk about that either. You see, because, global communications and everything, we can't talk about it. Everybody else in the world knows about it, so I don't really mean global communications. What I mean is ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, Fox, and MSNBC here in the United States, because we don't want the Americans to know about it. Everybody else knows about it. The Iranians know about it, the Afghans know about it, the Brits know about it, the Russians, the Germans, the Italians, the Israelis, the Saudis, everybody knows about it, but we're not going to talk about it because we don't want these stupid-ass Americans to know about it, because that would just make George look even more psychopathic, and, what's his ratings, 30%? No, sorry, boys, no answer here, no answer here, no answer here. I put my fingers in my ears and go, blah, 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 not listening, not listening. This is the press secretary. All right. Phone calls. Andrew. Andrew is calling from New York. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike. How are you doing tonight?
Doing fine.
That's fine. I just had a question about the PSAs, and I was wondering, as far as the Kurds go, What is their position? I was wondering what their position in all of this is, because you can see with the recent actions this week with the raiding of the Iranian consul in Kurdish territory and the airport incident, I wonder how long it's going to be before we go and attack the Kurds.
Well,
and turn on them.
Yeah,
they are oil rich, aren't they not?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And of course I don't have any answers, but my guess would be the Kurds, they control Kirkuk, and Kirkuk is the city that is in the middle of if I understand this right, some of the most productive oil fields when there's not a war going on in Iraq, and the Kurds are not going to turn loose of this because it is what has kept them stable.
Yeah.
The Kurdish north has not suffered the way the central part of the country and the south has suffered. But if push comes to shove, the Bush crime family will look at the Kurds as they've always looked at the Kurds. They're ciphers. They're blips. They're something to be swept off the stage. Now, how do they do that? Well, they notify the Turks. And they notify the Russians and just say, look, the Turks and the Kurds have been at each other's throats for how many centuries?
Yes, yes.
So this is why we try desperately to keep the Turks
on our side.
Yeah, on our side, because the Turks are more than willing. No offense to any Turks listening to the program, but the Turks in that part of the world are more are very okay with committing genocide. Just like the Americans are, just like the Israelis are, just like just about anybody is. That's what I was saying earlier.
That is true. That is
true.
And as far as Iran goes, I mean, they have a million-man army.
Yeah.
And they're well equipped. And it's like, how are we going to stop that? I mean, even if they don't have a nuke, you know, they don't develop the nuclear weapons in time, and we bomb them in the near future, that's still a million-man army coming across, going to be streaming across the border.
It's going to be horrifying. Andrew, I got to leave you there. Thanks,
Pat.
All right, appreciate you checking in. All right, we'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. About 7 past the hour. I got an email here during the break from Teresa. She writes, Mike, would someone please pass the peace pipe because I've got a big-ass headache. Thanks. Teresa, still running from Hurricanes Katrina, Rita, and bureaucratic BS in the dirty South Texas. Yeah, well, Teresa, if I had a peace pipe, you certainly would get a hit off of it. Leanne is calling from San Diego. Let's do another call here. Hi, Leanne.
Hi, how are you, Mike? Thanks letting me speak with you tonight.
No, absolutely. I'm doing fine.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about one thing. I work in a hospital. I'm a registered nurse that treats lots of veterans from all the different wars.
Uh-huh.
And I see all the things they come back with, brain injuries from traumatic brain injuries to gunshot wounds to shrapnel in their head, pretty messed up, and lots and lots of PTSD and psyched out patients that need mental help that they, you know, don't get enough of, and they're wind up being homeless and on the streets. And today on another talk show, I won't mention her name, but I really like her, but a lot of people were calling up saying they thought it was a great idea to bring back the draft. And
hey, you know, you can mention any show you want.
Well, okay, it's Randy, and I love Randy Rose,
okay.
But she was just egging these people on, and I would just, you know, if I could have gotten on the show, I would have, but she has no idea what she's talking about. I work with these veterans, and it's miserable. We don't need any more people going into any more wars just to prove a point. It's got to stop. This baloney about bringing back a draft is nonsense. It's just absolutely nonsense. I know it would prove a point, but it's not going to help anything. And as a matter of fact, most of the people that would be drafted are not going to be the ones that are causing all the problems. It's going to be kids like my kid and your kid and everybody else out there. So, you know, I think the draft stuff is nonsense and it should stop. That's just my opinion.
And take it
from someone that works with lots of veterans.
No, you've called this program before. And I deeply respect what you have to say. I would not challenge you on anything around these issues because I don't have the right to challenge you, and you have a thousand times more knowledge than I do. But let me ask you this: what this is what I think is one of the central issues of the draft thing. As long as we are a society run by people who will send soldiers to die for issues like who's going to control the oil. If we had a draft, and I'm just, this is the argument. I'm not in favor of a draft either. But if we had a draft where everyone had to give service. Now, Rangel's plan says that everyone between the ages, I don't know, 18 and 24 are eligible for the draft. But there are two ways you can get out of it, and only two. If you have a limiting physical condition or if you are morally opposed. In other words, that's written into Rangel's law. And in place of 2 years in the military, you would serve 2 years in the service of your country doing something. But Rangel's position is simple, and this is a guy who is a combat veteran, wounded in Korea, so he's not coming at this like a phony ass Republican,
right,
who's never seen what he's seen and you've seen.
Right.
He's seen it just like you have, and I think his position is, if we are going to, if we are still a society that enters into combat, then it should be shared by everybody. And I think the subtext of what he's saying is, if everyone is forced to share in war, then people will be less inclined to allow it to happen. So he may arrive at the same position you are advocating, only by doing it the other way. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and on paper it sounds great, but there's a lot of ifs there, and everybody knows that things sound great on paper, but then when they're actually put into place, it's completely different.
Well, that's true. That's
and
true.
And it's the people doing, you know, at the bottom of the chain are the ones that wind up getting the casualties and doing the work, and the upper echelons of society always seem to get out of it.
No, they do, and I think if I'm hearing you, I think what your concern is that with a draft in place, it would definitely, no question, be misused.
Right, absolutely.
No matter what was written into it to protect or try to prevent misuse, it would still be misused.
Absolutely, and yeah. I'm hearing this talk more and more because I listen to talk shows all the time, like all day long.
Uh-huh.
I have a clinical kind of job, but it's at my desk, and I listen to Air America and you in the evening all day long, all night long,
uh-huh.
And this is a recurrent theme. It keeps coming up. Maybe we should bring back the draft. Maybe we should bring – no, it is not a good idea, trust me. And – like you were talking about tonight, going now into Iran. Imagine if tomorrow if we wake up and we find out he does hit up Iran,
mm-hmm.
and immediately the draft is reinstated. You think we're going to have time to, you know, go through all the little loopholes and this and that, try to say, oh, well, you get to go, you don't get to go? No, it'll be an emergency. The draft will start, and the kids that are, you know, at the bottom of the food chain are the ones that are going to have to make the effort, not Bush and not all the congressmen and not all the senators sitting there in Washington.
That's very true. Well, like I said at the beginning of our conversation here tonight, I would no more challenge what you have to say than fly to the moon. So I respect what you said here. It does make sense, Leanne, and thanks for calling in, okay?
Well, thank you, and thanks for your show. I love you, and your wife does agree, and your wife do a great job. So
thank you very much.
Right, okay,
you
take care. Bye.
You too.
Bye.
Yeah, that has got to be the position. I have toyed with the Wrangell plan from the standpoint of from the standpoint of what I was trying to say on that phone call, that the shared responsibility would pretty much guarantee that such a thing would not happen, because if we all had to contribute or ran the risk of contributing, and the other thing, Wrangell's plan is based on a lottery. If we all had to run the risk of contributing ourselves or our sons or our daughters, then we would be less inclined to accept war as an instrument of corporatism, and more inclined to say no, but no, Leanne is right. Leanne is absolutely right. There should be no equivocation on this either, from people like me. I can't speak for Randy or anybody else, but I completely agree with what Leanne has said. Even though I have toyed with Wrangell's idea. We got time for one of these. Yeah, let's drop it in. This is this is from Carl Levin, the new chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, asking the new Secretary of Death, Robert Gates, how long he, Gates, anticipates this escalation of troops would need to stay in Iraq to complete the new mission, since Bush says our commitment there is not open-ended. And sadly, Gates' answer makes it sound like it is open-ended and just a continuation of our already failed policy.
The president said a few weeks ago that the United States, quote, will be in Iraq so long as the Iraqi government asks us to be in Iraq. Is that still our policy?
Yes, sir.
Now, isn't that the kind of open-ended commitment which the Baker-Hamilton group said was a mistake because, in their words, quote, an open-ended commitment of American forces would not provide the Iraqi government the incentive it needs to take the political actions that give Iraq the best chance of quelling sectarian violence. Isn't that kind of an open-ended statement, exactly the wrong message to the Iraqis?
Well, sir, I think, I mean, what I think the president had in mind was that we would probably have to be in Iraq to provide help of one kind or another to the Iraqis for quite some time. I think we'll have a pretty good idea early on.
Like when?
Well, I would think within on the military side, probably within a couple of months.
I've got a better answer than that, Mr. Gates. Senator Levin, the president said that we will stay in Iraq as long as the government wants us in Iraq. So the answer is very simple. We just continue to make sure that we put in place in Iraq a government that does ask us to stay. Because, you know, it's our butt boy. That's very easy to do. Maliki is a dead man walking. He'll soon be out. So the next one will beg us to stay. You see, we just keep doing that.
My dream is that there be a Palestinian state living side by side in peace with Iraq.
Two past the hour. Back to the hearing before the Senate Armed Services Committee. Gates continues answering Senator Levin's question about our commitment and his "we'll know something in 2 months" prediction. And then Levin points out how there's nothing new in Bush's plan. There's no change, of course. Bush is just repeating the same failed plans as before with some sort of cynicism that the Iraqis will finally take some action on their own.
And I think if at that time we conclude that at a government level and on a broad level they have not fulfilled their commitments, then I think we have to reevaluate our strategy.
Just saying we're going to reevaluate our strategy is the definition of an open-ended commitment. Just, again, I mean, we reevaluate strategy all the time. Just to say, if you folks don't live up to what you commit, well, then we're going to reevaluate. That's not pressure on the Iraqis. That's the same thing which has been going on for years.
Well, the president did indicate to Prime Minister Maliki that his patience was not unlimited.
I'm afraid that we're in the same situation we were back then, is that we have promises and commitments without deadlines, promises that weren't kept to do the exact same thing that they say they'll do now, but without the consequences if they fail, other than we'll reevaluate our strategy. And it seems to me that is not a change of course. That's a repetition.
Yeah, but the whole thing, Senator Levin, is just smoke and mirrors. We should know this. You should know this, Senator. You're so much smarter than I am. You really are. You are privy to information that I will never see and that I, as an American citizen, am not supposed to know about. And that information is the Iraq mission is more or less completed. It's finished. keeping 150,000 troops in Iraq is part of the plan. Continuing to build the bases is part of the plan. What is going on now, Senator Levin, and surely to God you know this because you're a smart man. The target now is Iran. That's all. This is. I don't know why this appears to be so hard. I really don't, Senator Levin. I really respect you. But why don't you folks bring that up? So now it's John McCain's turn. The coward that used to bomb civilians in the Vietnam War, in order to prove to his daddy, who was the admiral of all the forces in the Southeast Pacific, when McCain was a flyboy, war-happy John McCain, who is playing with half a mind. I won't say half a brain, half a mind. McCain then asked Gates if he had confidence in the Maliki government's desire and ability to live up to their end of the plan. Gates' answer is very telling, even though it's asked by a cowardly halfwit. Gates says that the Iraqi government wants to take control of the operations, so yes, he believes the plan will work. But it sure sounds to me like Maliki doesn't want anything of the sort.
Do you have confidence that the present Iraqi government will carry out the commitments that they have made in recent days, as Senator Levin just discussed? As the chairman has indicated, the record of fulfilling the commitments is not an encouraging one. But I will say this. They really do seem to be eager to take control of this security situation. Prime Minister Maliki told me when I was there about 2.5 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, that how can I be held accountable if I don't have control of my own military forces? How can you hold me accountable if I don't have control of my own military forces? That they have every intention of fulfilling their commitments this time.
How can I be held accountable if I don't have control of my... Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Yeah. All right, 26 before the hour. Last one here. This is from Ted Kennedy, Senator Kennedy. He follows up on this Maliki issue by citing news reports that show that Maliki is tepid at best about this plan, which Bush claims Maliki designed. Of course, Maliki isn't even publicly commenting on this new way forward nonsense. So much for that lie. Listen to the applause at the end when Kennedy outlines a different approach.
Now we have the announcement of the president's program. We don't have, and we ask ourselves, well, what is the reaction from Mr. Maliki? And if you look at this morning's paper with the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of the New York Times, John Burns. This is his report. Iraqi Shiite-led government offered only grudging endorsement on Thursday of a president's proposal, deploying 20,000 additional troops in an effort to curb sectarian violence and regain back. The tepid response raised questions about whether the government make a good-faith effort to prosecute the new war plan. Iraqi leader Prime Minister Maliki failed to appear at a news conference and avoided any public comment. Now we're asking American people to support an increase if you have this kind of reaction in terms of Mr. Maliki, why shouldn't an understanding that American foreign policy is best when it has the when the American people are behind it, when they're behind an American foreign policy, that's when it's at its best. Why not come back to the Congress? Why not come back and permit us to have a vote on this surge? Let the American people speak through their elected representatives to find out whether the American people, with the kind of took the president now 2 months to make this judgment, let us have 10 days to try and make a judgment and a decision whether the American people are behind this.
No. I don't want to do that, Senator Kennedy. If you're a member of the Bush crime family, first of all, the American people have already spoken in poll after poll after poll that we want none of this, no more of this. Of course, the troops are already on their way, and the missiles are in place, and the battle groups are floating in the off the coast of Iran. But no, that's not how the Bush crime family works, Senator. Anyone with the sense God gave a bag of doorknobs understands that nobody in America that still has a brain wants anything to do with this nonsense. But that doesn't matter. It's never mattered. These filthy, cowardly sons of bitches in the Bush crime family, every single one of them, who will use other people's children and husbands and wives as cannon fodder, will move ahead no matter what. They will talk about liberty and freedom and justice and dignity and democracy, and the filthy, stinking, lying thugs are not meaning any of it. What they're talking about is money, greed, profit, oil, wealth. Remember, the people that die to members of the Bush crime family are flickable. Flickable. You just flick them out of the way. You flick them. You know, like you flick your bick. You flick them. They don't count. They don't matter. They're human beings. They have no value. The only thing that has value to these filthy bastards is money and power and greed and lust and all the seven cardinal sins. Oh, that's right. These are people who believe in Jesus. Yeah, sure they do. Back to your phone calls. Prez is calling from San Francisco, holding on forever. Hi, Prez.
Hi there, Mike. How you doing?
Doing fine. How are you?
I'm finally able to talk to you. I really appreciate what you're doing. You're about the only person that has the passion to call these people for what they are. Cowards is the main word.
Oh, man, isn't it the truth?
It's just unbelievable. You know, we're talking about a way to deal with it. And I appreciate the guy from New York, I believe it was, or Michigan, that was talking about demonstrations. You know, they're good to make you realize you're not alone. And
yeah, that's true.
You feel maybe
true.
A little bit better, but the problem is that they're going to ignore any demonstration just like they ignored all the other ones. And what we have to do, number one, is cut off the money right away and then start impeachment already so I can't do it again.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're going to do it. I think the Democrats are being blackmailed, possibly. I think they might know what's going on. They're too cynical, and this is all just a pony show in Congress right now. I think they're perhaps maybe even afraid of the anthrax. Who knows? But I think that even if they would have gone to the American people in the beginning and said, listen, we need the oil. We need to go get it for you. Let us do it. Maybe we would have been forced to making a real decision right then. Maybe we would have said, you know what? If we would have sustained what I think is an unsustainable model of living that we have in this country, mm-hmm. China and India, it's too late for them. They're never going to have what we had.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they are. If you read Michael Rupert or anybody else, you know the oil, that half of the oil is supposed to be in there now, is going to be a hell of a lot more expensive to get out of the ground.
Right.
Right? That's what you were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wanted to comment very respectfully to that nurse in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Vietnam veteran. I was in the Marine Corps. I spent a year in Vietnam. And I take care of veterans myself in a hospital. I'm a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a draft would be good for two things. I think it'd be a lot harder for these elite people to get out of the draft now like they did in the Vietnam War. I think there's more visibility now, number one. And number two, the sheer idea, the gesture of doing it, And LBJ said in 1965, the Vietnam War will be a limited action, unquote.
Right.
To no impact. As soon as they instated the draft, I joined when I was 17 in 66. There was people in line for my physical that the Marine Corps recruiters were going down and picking at these Army draftees, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Every sixth guy was going to go in the Marine Corps.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. That's
those
the way
those guys were counting like they'd never counted before.
Absolutely. In 1965, when I was in Jacksonville and went to the Jacksonville Naval Air Station to take my pre-induction physical, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that that's the way it worked. Every sixth or seventh man
that
was standing there was going to go into the Marine Corps.
But what happened was that was the beginning of the waking up of the American people, and that's when it really started, the protest and everything,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. And also, I want to answer a couple of quick questions you posed, some things you're wondering about. The Iran-Iraq War, I believe, was about 8 or 9 years.
Yeah,
And it was millions of people were killed.
Yeah, I think it was 8 years long.
Large amounts of gas that, of course, you know, Remy, when he was working for that chemical company, sold to Saddam, of course, like you were mentioning earlier. Those particular crimes would never be prosecuted. Those have been safely ensconced in his coffin with him.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
And another thing about Venezuela was the country where they nationalized the electric grid and also one of the media companies because of the American ownership.
Mm-hmm.
It was Venezuela.
It was Venezuela. Okay.
You know, as a matter is, you might have some quibbles with Chavez, but I'll tell you what, he's doing what's popular. And Latin America actually gives me hope. There's not much in this world, but they really give me hope what's going on down there. It's really great. A lot of the things that are happening in that country.
I think there are certain industries that, and I guess this firmly puts me in the mixed economy group or the socialist group. But there are certain industries that private enterprise has no business touching.
Well, I believe that healthcare, transportation, and education, you don't need to make money.
There you go.
They don't necessarily have to make money. It's the public good they serve. Of course, that's the common good, and that's something that... What is that, you know?
Yeah.
But McCain,
really.
I try to make this point about McCain. You know, I was in the Marine Corps. I was on the ground. He was flying around in a Navy jet.
Right.
And, you know, all due respect, which in my opinion is not much, the way he let himself be kicked around like a redheaded stepchild out there in South Carolina, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was awful. Just awful. Back
it was
in 2000.
Awful.
Yeah, it's awful.
And the way he sucks up is just like I don't think there's much of a spine there. He may have like 6 vertebrae or something like that.
I think you're right.
You know. But I was thinking, I woke up crying the other day after that another deification of a dead Republican president with Ford's coffin sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking that if we saw even 10% of the coffins coming back, you know, from this war, the war would be over. We demand, you know, and that brings me to one other thing. This authorization to use force, that's done now. He can't use that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
This is, and I heard another thing, and I'm sorry, I just had all these ideas, and I don't know when I'll be able to call you again, but I understood, a friend of mine was telling me today that apparently they found some paperwork in one of the little bubbly-headed idiot twin girls of those down South America that apparently Bush is buying a ranch in Paraguay, which does not have an extradition treaty.
That's right, yeah. That's,
you know, I don't know how much truth there is in that.
No, I think it is true. And
I believe it is.
It came out a couple of several weeks ago, and I haven't commented on it yet, but it's real interesting to me because Paraguay is where an awful lot of former Nazis wound up from Germany.
Exactly.
And it wouldn't surprise me. But Press, it's always good to hear from you. I hope you call in again. Take care, all right?
Thanks, Mike.
All right,
keep
sir.
Keep up the fight, man.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Take care. The British find no evidence of arms traffic from Iran. This is an article from the Washington Post just a couple of months ago. Since late August, British commandos in the deserts of far southeastern Iraq have been testing one of the most serious charges leveled by the United States against Iran, that Iran is secretly supplying weapons, parts, funds, and training for attacks on U.S.-led forces in Iraq. The British have found no such thing. 10 before the hour. Again, thanks to our crew. Ian Huff, who handles the engineering of this program and also answers your calls. Thanks, Ian. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall, our webmaster. The militant moderators at MikeMoloy.com. Ben Birch, who archives the program at Novam Radio. And at any time you can go to Novam Radio for downloads and podcasts of the program. They're still tweaking the site, so be patient. It'll all work out in the end, okay? So thanks to everybody who, including you, True Seeker, who kept this program on the air again for another week. Back to your calls. Eli is calling from Portland, Oregon. Eli, welcome to the program.
How are you doing, Mike?
Doing fine, sir. How are you?
Excellent. We got to get you back on the air up here.
We're coming. We're coming to, what's the station, Kathy?
KPOJ, man.
Yeah, we're coming to KPOJ. I'm not sure when, but it's going to happen soon, I believe.
Oh, thrilled. A lot of people here miss you.
Well, we really like being on the air in Portland.
Awesome. Briefly wanted to just kind of take issue with what you had said regarding Maliki and Al-Sadr, but it actually comes down more in your favor than anything. You had said that he's aligned with Al-Sadr, Maliki is.
Yeah.
That is true to a certain extent because they are both Shia.
Yes.
But Al-Sadr wants an immediate expulsion of U.S. forces.
Mm-hmm.
And Maliki is playing us for all we've got, hoping that the U.S. can be used to mop up the Sunnis.
Well, all right, yeah.
So there's a definite split there. And you also mentioned that Al-Qaeda was Shia. Al-Qaeda is violently Wahhab Sunni.
Who?
Believe it. They're Wahhabi Sunnis.
Who is?
Al-Qaeda.
No, I said Taliban.
Oh, my bad then. I heard Al-Qaeda.
No, Al-Qaeda. I'm not even sure that Al-Qaeda as a separate entity really exists.
Yeah, the database.
Yeah, what I'm talking about is the Taliban in Afghanistan, and then next to that you have the Shia in Iran, and next to that you have the Shia in Iraq. This is a major threat to two of our allies in the Middle East, Israel and Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia, absolutely.
Right.
So
no, not Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is, as you point out, if such a thing does exist.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. They are the suicide bombers. They are the Wahhabists. They are the...
They're the South.
Yeah, the shock troops.
Yeah, Fedakin.
Say it again?
Fedakin.
Yeah, there you go.
Death troopers, yeah.
All right, Eli, thanks. I appreciate you.
Yeah, take it easy.
All right, sir, take care. Gary is calling from Tallahassee, Florida. Hey, Gary.
I'd like to just add my agreement with the fellow that called about the draft. I think one of the biggest problems today is the apathy in this country that exists as a result of, I don't know if apathy is the right word, just misinformation, misunderstanding, lack of involvement because everybody's so busy trying to just make ends meet or do their own thing.
That's
the draft
true.
Forces
yeah.
people to be involved. I mean, I've got family that have kids at draft age, and I'll tell you what, if they don't even pay attention to this thing because it doesn't affect them.
Right.
But, you know, if it affected them, they would pay attention because family is everything to them.
Well, that was the point. That's the position that I sort of take. I had two nurses call me tonight. Both
I listened.
Yeah,
and,
both.
And
right, both of whom deal with combat injuries. One of whom, as you heard, the man, the Marine veteran, has actually been there, done that. But I would not challenge anyone who truly believes that there should be no draft, there should be no war. And I think that's what the female nurse was trying to say. And I agree with her. While I agree with Leanne, and with our Marine veteran, I agree with both of them, damn it.
It's a difficult position.
It is.
You know, I served during Vietnam. I didn't go to Vietnam. And I think as a result of my not going there, it never meant as much to me until later on I started hearing and understanding more of what's happened. But I think the draft forced a lot of people that's the reason that you don't have the protest today, because people don't, they don't understand. They don't know what's happening. They're not as involved.
Well, I agree with you, Gary, and that's what kind of what I was basing my my argument or my point of view on. I don't believe that there should be a draft. I don't believe people should be conscripted into military service unless this country is attacked. And if this country were ever literally attacked by an invading army, I don't think we need a draft. I think every one of us, man, woman,
that's exactly right.
Right, would pick up a weapon and defend us. So, on the other hand, Leanne was saying. And I think we agreed that if you do have a draft, yes, it does involve more people and therefore makes us more, it forces us to become more aware. Still in all, that can be abused by a militaristic coward like George W. Bush. So,
absolutely. The draft didn't prevent Vietnam, but I think the draft did bring Vietnam to an end earlier.
I agree.
I think we lived in an era of a little bit of naivete back then that we don't have today.
That's true.
I think people would not sucker for another Vietnam if they knew it involved them.
Yeah. I've got to agree with you. While I agree with Leanne, I've got to agree with you, too, and the Marines. So thanks a lot, Gary.
Thanks for your program.
All right, sir.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. I appreciate you checking in. Yeah, it's just very difficult. I certainly can see the point of view that Leanne was making. I can certainly see the point of view that these two male callers who take the other tack. Fundamentally, I agree with the idea that if we had a draft, if we had conscription in this country, you can be damn good and sure that people would think before they, started putting the yellow, metallic yellow ribbons made in China on the back of their SUVs. Oh God, what a week! Listen, try to get some rest this weekend. All right, Truth Seeker, enjoy yourself to the extent that you can. I'll see you Monday night. Thanks for participating. Thanks for your support of Nova M Radio Network. I'll see you Monday night. All right, take care. Watch your back. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. And have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.